How's it going, feed freaks? This is Sean Frelick, and you're back listening to the Startup Showcase. Host Scott Catoon is out for this show. You got me back, and we also got some wonderful Chicago weather back. Step by step, I am shedding layers. Dropped the jacket today, which means I did not have my fob for the office, which is, you know, there's a give and take with the weather. You forget things sometimes. But in that is a bit of a return to form that you eventually find, which, why am I talking about all these things? I'm talking about bringing people back from the brink. I am talking about major societal taboos and struggles that people go through. I'm talking about poverty. I'm talking about victims of domestic violence. I'm talking about homelessness and incarceration. Many terrible experiences that people undergo that can stifle your professional development, which isn't fair. And those people need to be served. And that's why today our guest is Maria Kim, who is president and CEO of Kara. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So give us a rundown of what Kara is and who it serves and how it goes about doing it.
Sure. I like to think about Kara as boot camps and businesses that help people affected by homelessness and poverty to get back to work. So if you think about it, we're full and part-time training programs that are focused on job readiness and socio-emotional skills and layering some credentialed skills on top to get folks ready for the workplace. But in addition, we have our own businesses, our own for-profit businesses that hire the individuals we serve, put some more shine on their resume, and get them ready to be placed in the private sector. So we do all that, get them placed, and then stay with them so that they stick and stay on the job.
And what's your role as president and CEO? How do you oversee what sounds like a massive infrastructure of a business?
As president and CEO, I think I'm all about fundraising, to be honest with you. I'm about soliciting new companies to hire the individuals we serve, also about helping folks to invest in our mission and really loosen up their wallets to invest in a mission that's doing some good work, and also finding customers and clients for our social enterprises, the businesses that we own and operate.
Yeah. So what is your pitch to investors? How do you get them to believe in this mission of helping these hurting people get more opportunity and get them on the right path?
I think it's all about, you know, if we can pull up for a second and have empathy for folks in need of a second chance. So I ask people if they've ever screwed up, and if they've ever bounced back from that screw up, and what it took to get them there. In many cases, it was a friend. It was a support system. It was access and opportunity, right? And actually, Kara is a Gaelic word that means friend. And so I say that's what we're there for. We're there to be this intersection between where people are at and where they want to be. And it works. Folks stick and stay on the jobs at 70% at 1 year of employment, which is a market differentiator by 20 points. So we could say we outpace national norms by 20 points. Our folks are sticking and staying. And so we know that, you know, getting a second chance, being able to reenter the workforce in this way does work. And it means a lot for not only the individuals we serve, but their families and their community.
Yeah. And how do you go about finding the individuals that Kara serves? And how do you, once you have them within your infrastructure, what is the boot camp like? What is the process like for them to learn?
Yeah, so we'll work with tons of different referral partners. So churches, domestic violence shelters, recovery homes, transitional living shelters, and we'll go recruit folks that might be at a food pantry, that might be underemployed in search of a new job, a new beginning, and we'll go recruit them into the program. And then once they get here, they get enrolled in either a full or part-time training program that's about skill building. But it's not just about kind of basic skills to reenter the workforce. It's also about what do we need to do on ourselves, you know, to manage the noise of life so that once we get a job, that noise doesn't trip us up and prevent us from keeping it over the long term.
That sounds like advice that literally anyone can use.
For sure, absolutely.
So what are some of those lessons? Let's open up the book a little bit of balancing what you were talking about, the noise of life, and trying to be a professional.
Yeah. So if you think about it, sometimes, like what we'll do in our full-time program, we'll do a class called the mirror exercise. And we ask people to look into a mirror and say, what do you see? You know, and sometimes when you've been knocked off your square for so long, you've been generationally homeless, you've been chronically poor, you've had people say that you're less than for so long, you might look in that mirror and you might say, I see a bad mom. I see an ex-offender, or I see whatever fill-in-the-blank label that society has put on you. But in fact, what we see is a strong person who is looking for a new beginning and who needs a community of support to go get at it. So we need to do all that work to recover from the past, to overcome misfortunes and missteps, so that once we do that, we can really focus on who we want to be as a professional and in our career.
Yeah. I imagine I haven't experienced any of these really terrible afflictions, but I think myself included, we all know what it's like to have labels put on us and a story made about us that isn't related to the truth of things. And you have to learn how to separate those two. I'm going to switch gears a little bit and point in how Kara was founded in 1991. So mm-hmm. in some ways, you'd consider that an older company. Mm-hmm. I imagine Kara may have had to go through some pivots and some innovations over the years. So in your position, and how long have you been president and CEO?
I've been president and CEO for 4 years, but with Kara for 13.
13, okay. So what kind of transformations has Kara had to make over the years in order to stay relevant with the changing tech tide?
Awesome, awesome question. And frankly, right now, to give a teaser for what we're stressed out about today, I worry about how jobs are changing with the emergence of so much technology and of a digital economy. You know, how are these entry-level jobs of today vastly different than they were years ago? I stress out about that and want to do some good thinking around that. But in terms of the innovations we've made over the last two decades and some change, is we have started two businesses that were really about making sure that what we teach in the classroom has relevance in the workplace. So we started one business called Clean Slate, which is an exterior maintenance business, really about helping to employ folks who have the toughest barriers to employment, get them in this job and then ready for replacement in the private sector. And then when the Great Recession hit, you know, we realized, hey, if we can't beat them, join them. There were so many employers that were pivoting out of direct hire and going to contract staffing. And so we're like, damn, we better be a piece of that pie. And began our own boutique staffing company as a result called Kara Connects.
Mm-hmm. So in your research into the evolution of entry-level jobs, you touched on the switch to more contract positions, but what other evolutions have you seen in terms of entry-level positions?
I mean, we're definitely still in the hurting process from being a part of the Rust Belt, right? So the service sector is rising, and the importance of customer service and professionalism in all jobs, no matter where they are on the food chain, are critically important. So we've clearly seen that shift. We've also seen a need for people to have digital literacy to the tune that they've never had before. You know, for many of our students, the folks that we see, their average age is around 39 years old. So these are folks for whom their traditional education system may not have succeeded. You know, in some cases, the average literacy and numeracy is sixth and eighth grade. And now, in order to be market competitive, you really need to be digitally literate at a new level. And so I worry sometimes is how do we make sure we right skill this population that we've kind of left behind and make sure that they have the skills that they need to re-enter the workforce?
So how would you say the difficulty of the job has changed in light of all that? It seems like the demands are higher.
The demands are higher. So to get the same kind of first rung job on the career ladder, you have to be on your tippy toes and you have to reach ever higher than you used to just to get the bottom of the rung, right? And so imagine, you know, folks that we're serving have decades of work life left before them. We really have to hustle and work double time to make sure we can close that skill gap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what are some of the, you mentioned the boutique earlier, and that sounded like a really just a fun, interesting job. So I'm curious about, like, what are some of the other businesses that Kara has created that hire some of these underserved people that come into your system?
Yeah, we've had two that didn't work out so well.
Oh, really?
So just like every other, you know, small business, scrappy startup, we had two that have hit it out of the park and two that didn't work out so well. The two that didn't work out so well, one was called 180 Properties, and it was a property preservation business. Think about wanting to make lemonade out of lemons. You had all these homes that were in foreclosure. How do we create a workforce that helps to preserve those properties and get them contained and safe, right? So we did that business for a while, but it couldn't quite sustain itself. So we had to sunset that a few years ago. And then we did a used book resale and recycling business called Chapter 2 that couldn't quite get the scale that we wanted. So we nipped that one in the bud too. Constantly we're in search of what businesses can give us both diversified revenue, but also create jobs. This is our mission is all about job creation for individuals at the precipice. So we really need to be smart about both of those directives.
Sounds like you're working within a pretty big sandbox of like experimentation and It seems like you're creating businesses in a lot of different realms. What are some of the lessons learned in terms of those failures that have, as you said, sunset? And how does that inform future business endeavors?
Oh, so I think that, you know, what we've learned is that it's important to innovate and iterate, and that we have tried prototyping things more quickly. I think after the experience with the first business that we had to sunset, we realized it's okay for us to take risks, but when we realize it's not working, it's okay to make decisions very quickly and not protract that decision-making process over too long a period of time, because quite frankly, real lives are at stake in addition to just the aspect of maintaining a healthy business.
Yeah, I like the term sunset because it really puts a natural spin on it.
It's much sweeter.
It is much sweeter, yeah. And it helps you like, well, the sunrise will come back and I will find another way about
exactly
it.
Exactly right.
So from reading your bio, you've spent quite a few years in the insurance industry. And I was curious about how that experience prepared you for the role of president and CEO.
Yeah, so I spent 13 years-ish in the insurance industry, the last 8 of which were head of a technology division, actually. And, you know, one of the things that I learned the most is that these two sectors are not that different. And that even though we call it the nonprofit sector, in fact, I can't stand that term. It's actually for purpose. You know, it might not be for profit in the traditional sense, but it's for purpose. And we need to produce results and ROI just like everybody else. We just happen to reinvest our dividends in a different way. So frankly, my experience back then, you know, parlays into my work now because we're just running another business in a different vertical and those same lessons apply.
Mm-hmm. And what's it like? I imagine you're holding a lot more responsibility now.
Yeah.
And so what kind of transitions do you have to make to step up and be in a higher level of leadership than you had previously experienced?
I think that if I were really honest with you, I'd say that I'm an incredible number two. I'm like wired to be a chief operating officer, a great behind the scenes person, and that my biggest learning in the last 4 years is what does it take to create discomfort out of my natural disposition to be a great CEO, to be a great number one, right? And so that means checking a lot of my own stuff at the door and understanding that this work is really about people and this mission and everything like that. And in the process, I've faked it till I made it, I guess, and now I think I'm on a good stride.
Mm-hmm. That sounds pretty wonderful. So we talked about Care Connects, and I was curious to learn about what other developments are on the way with Care.
So two big things for us. Number one, we are expanding our work with young people, particularly young folks who are at the epicenter of gang violence in our city. How can we be more disruptive in their lives and help to give above ground economy alternatives to the work that they're doing so that they're not destined to live out a lifetime of poverty? So that's one big expansion of our portfolio. And then secondly, we are doing the heavy lifting now to figure out what would it take to take the essence of CARA and bring it to new markets in other parts of the country. So we have a prototype in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and we are now working on what would it take to kind of lather, rinse, repeat in new markets around the U.S.
So what's CARA going to need in terms of investment, in terms of hirings? Like, what do you need to acquire in order to achieve that growth?
First and foremost, we need employers who will say yes. And so we need employers who are open to being more inclusive in their hiring and more intentional in their practices. And that means being a part of the right skilling solution. So figuring out what can I do to help make sure that people have the right skills for the jobs of today. It also means being forgiving. You know, April this past month was called Second Chance Month. And the notion was, how do employers become more appropriate and inclusive in their hiring practices so that they don't box out individuals who've been affected by the justice system but are in need of a second chance? So most people might say money as their first answer. But for us, mm-hmm. I really think it's jobs, and it's the mobility that comes through employers who are willing to say yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It sounds like is it fair to say mission first company?
Yeah.
And that term does sometimes skew into the realm of being like a buzzword and it's misappropriated. But let's give you the chance to set the record straight. And what is a Mission First company?
Well, I mean, I will say that, like, when I talk about the notion of our social enterprises, these businesses that we run ourselves, I say the difference that we have with our analogs in the private sector is that they're intended to maximize shareholder value. And I get that, that they should be profit maximizing. That should be their intent. For a social enterprise, we're really about maximizing dream holder value. Not to be too cheesy about it, but it's true. The individuals we serve have dreams of their own in terms of new lives, new opportunities, new futures. And these businesses need to be there to create employment for them, right? So that we can get them on their pathway to real and lasting success.
How rewarding is it? I imagine, just off the top of my head, thinking about all the potential stories that you've seen of people coming from a dark place and really turning their life around. So what's that like to see that transformation?
It's miraculous, to be honest with you. It, like, it checks you to remember. You know, I believe that we are each in recovery. I believe that we are each in recovery. Some people might be in recovery of an addiction. Some people might be in recovery of a loss. But we each have that in our lives. And when you see someone bust through that wall and get to the other side, and, like, their kids are behind them, right? Their community is behind them. The next generation is looking up to them. What? There's nothing better than that. It's true. When I made this pivot in 2005, I have not looked back, not one day, not once. And it's because of these kinds of transformations that you're talking about.
Hell yeah, Maria.
Yeah, that snaps is a and hell claps. Yeah,
yeah. And speaking of sunrise, sunset, I think this interview is heading towards a sunset. But I know, because I'm looking at the clock. So let's close things out and let's let our listeners know where they can learn more about Kara.
Yeah, you can learn more about Kara at karachicago.org.
All right, Maria, thank you for joining the show today.
Thank you so much.
Watch and listen to this episode and more at technori.com. Download the podcast on iTunes and stay connected by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Technori, or follow me at Frelick Sean. Stick a fork in it. This dish is done.